Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda, and this is our edition of our artistic portion of our show. I am so excited about our guest today. I have Sierra Hall with me. And Sierra is a singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and she has hit more milestones than many musicians accomplish in a lifetime. After making her Grand Ole Opry debut at the age of 10, the Tennessee-bred virtuoso mandolinist played Carnegie Hall at age 12, then landed a deal with Rounder Records just a year later. Now 28 years old, Hall is set to deliver her fourth full-length Rounder, an elegantly inventive and endlessly captivating album called 25 Trips. Revealing her profound warmth as a storyteller, 25 Trips finds Hall shedding light on the beauty and chaos and sometimes sorrow of growing up and getting older. To that end, the album's title nods to a particularly momentous year of her life, including her marriage to fellow bluegrass musician Justin Moses and the release of her wildly acclaimed album, Weighted Mind, a Bella Flick-produced effort nominated for Best Folk Album at the 2017 Grammy Awards. It is my pleasure to welcome Sierra to our show today.
Hey, hey. How's it going?
It's great. Well, thanks so much for being here. Wow, what an exciting career that you've had. Why don't you just take us down that journey for a moment and tell us about some of those early days and then just the journey, because that's always an exciting piece, and especially because yours has been one at such a young age.
Yeah, well, I was lucky to find my love for music really early. My parents kind of always surrounded my brother and I in a house full of music, usually kind of church music was my earliest influence, just going to church and hearing the old hymns and my, you know, everybody from my granny to my great aunt sang. And it wasn't like anybody was trying to do it professionally or even really be on a stage. It was just kind of a way of life and part of going to church every week and hearing music that way. And so I remember my mom teaching me my first song when I was probably about 4 years old, just singing. And then as I grew a little older, my dad, who had always really loved music, decided he wanted to learn to play something. My parents built a house next door to my great aunt and uncle. And my uncle Junior played mandolin a little bit and fiddle and guitar. And he wasn't a professional musician by any means, totally just self-taught, you know, but knew how to play some kind of old time tunes, things like Wildwood Flower on the guitar or just kind of old country songs, things like that. And then every time you'd walk in their house, you know, and my brother and I spent countless times, you know, with them in the summer, just every day we were at their house. So you'd walk in and always hear he'd be playing music of some sort. So the idea of playing mandolin or fiddle or guitar, some instrument didn't seem foreign to me, but I hadn't really thought about doing it myself until my dad bought, my Uncle Junior loaned him a guitar and he started learning to play just a little bit himself while we'd sing in church and stuff. And then my dad had always loved the mandolin, saved up enough money to buy one for himself. And then he started going to some of these local bluegrass jams and started really kind of getting bit by the bluegrass bug. So that was sort of my introduction, was through my dad. And, you know, my brother started trying to learn to play a little bit, and I was the annoying little sister that wanted to do everything my older brother did. So I decided, well, I want to play something too. So I got a fiddle for Christmas. My granny and my great aunt got one for me, and it was just a little too big for me to handle. You know, you have the full size violins and then you have the like smaller beginner violins. And so I really needed a smaller one. It was just, I couldn't really, you know, get my arm all even fully extended. I couldn't reach all the way to the end of the neck of the instrument. So my dad, who had been learning to play mandolin, said, well, you know, the mandolin is tuned like the fiddle in that you have G, D, A, E, you have these same string names, they're tuned, the pitches are the same, except for on the mandolin, you're using a pick like you would on a guitar and not using a bow, you know, so there's obviously differences, and the mandolin actually has 8 strings versus 4 like the violin, but they're tuned in pairs, so you kind of treat them like 4. So, okay. So there are similarities. So at least with the left hand, he was like, I could show you how to play a tune or two, and hopefully you'll be able to like get a smaller fiddle at some point. We'll find you a smaller one and you'll kind of already know where to put your fingers with the left hand. So that was kind of the logic, which makes total sense, but I just fell in love with the mandolin and that really became my passion. And pretty much from the time I started at 8 years old, I knew that was what I wanted to do with my life. I just absolutely fell in love with it.
So how did you land on the Grand Ole Opry at age 10? That's just 2 years. That's an amazing story in itself.
I know. It's crazy kind of thinking about how fast time seems to fly by at this age for me now. I'm 29 right now, and it feels like, wow, you know, time just flies already. But back then, you know, 2 years would have felt like a lifetime. You know, it feels like when you're a kid, it feels like I've been playing mandolin forever, you know, and I would watch the Grand Ole Opry on television. Usually we'd be at a jam on Saturday night when it would come on television. So they would do a replay on CMT at the time on Sunday mornings. And so we would always catch the Grand Ole Opry on Sunday mornings. And I remember thinking, oh, it'd be such a dream to get to play on there. So I think for most musicians, when you take up playing bluegrass, country music, any kind of real form of acoustic music, it typically becomes a dream to get to play on that stage. So I literally had pictures that I drew of myself getting to play that stage. You know, when I was a little kid, I loved to do artwork. And so my mom saved a bunch of the little scribblings where I would like draw myself on that stage. And I guess the way it really happened is that my brother and I, as kind of we started getting more into playing music, and I was always maybe a little bit more serious about it than he was. He had tons of interests and loved to play baseball and all kinds of other things that he was really good at. But music was kind of the main focus for me. And so I would go around just about every weekend with my dad to these jams. And you know how it is when you're a little kid, somebody's like, oh, look at that cute little kid playing music. You know, even if you're not very good yet, you know, people kind of talk about the fact that a little kid is playing. And so it kind of just, as I got better and better and we started going around to different jams, and then one person might hear us play at this place and invite us to come play at another place, and then somebody hears you play there, you know, kind of the word of mouth thing. And so somebody invited us to go play in Crossville, Tennessee at a show that Mike Snyder, who's a longtime Grand Ole Opry member and banjo player, comedian actually, was playing at, I think, the fairgrounds. And my brother and I were opening the show for Mike. And so we got that gig. And after we finished playing, Mike gets on stage, and we got to say hello to him before he went on stage and stuff. But he gets on stage and he says, folks, what'd you think about those two little kids that opened the show? You know, and everybody claps. And he says, well, the next time you see them play, it'll be with me on the stage of the Grand Ole Opry. And so that was like his way of inviting us to come play. And sure enough, in a few months, we got to go join Mike on stage at the Grand Ole Opry. And that was the first time getting to play there. And it's was amazing. A few months later, one of my big goals was to get to play with Alison Krauss. Like, she had become my biggest hero in the world. And so I literally had been drawing these pictures of getting to play the Grand Ole Opry, but usually when I would draw the pictures, it would be alongside Alison Krauss too. It was like kind of a double dream, and got to play with her there a few months later. And, it's kind of another story in and of itself, but you know, it's just amazing that, my husband and I played the Grand Ole Opry just last night. And I still stand in that circle on that stage and can just think back of being, you know, 10 years old, getting to do that. And it's just amazing, to this day, still.
Absolutely.
A thrill to get to play there.
So there's two things I just want to point out to our audience, because I always like to take the nuggets that you've shared and put them in sort of a application form. But dreaming and using vision boards and really putting it out there, how you see yourself and where you see yourself going, is such an important piece. And I love that. you know, even as a young girl, drawing those things out. It's huge. And then the second thing, as a performer, people always want to just wait till they're perfect at doing something. It's really about getting yourself out there and being heard, being seen, being heard. I mean, that's how those things came to pass. And I just think that it's really important for people, whether they're a musician or another form of artist or even a professional speaker, you have to just get yourself out there. You have to be seen. So
absolutely.
I love that part of your story.
Yeah. And I think, like, as a young person, you sometimes, you know, you don't have the same kind of fear as you might as an adult. You know, your awareness is like the world is your oyster, like, you know, or at least in my case, I had, you know, really encouraging parents and that never, they never doubted in my mind that my dreams would be possible. And sometimes I look back and think, gosh, I don't know what it was about my parents that really instilled that belief in me, because, you know, I mean, we grew up in this tiny little town of, you know, 900 people and, you know, certainly not from a wealthy family and like none of those things, but yet just that belief of like, you know, if you love doing something, then it's worth going after and it's worth chasing. So I think because my parents knew I loved it so much, they really put that belief in me that anything was possible. And sometimes I have to go back and remember that as I get older, because it's easier to get a little bit more cynical or worn down by just, you know, work and life and all those things. Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, that simple thing of storyboarding and drawing things and like having that, you know, those big dreams. I think, you know, we have to remind ourselves that as adults sometimes, just as much to kind of go back and try to have that childlike freedom to dream.
Yes. And I've been actually speaking about that more. My whole theme for 2022 is going to be dream, because I think there's a point, and it doesn't have to be, but people at a certain age quit dreaming. And I see mentors that I've had, even I have an uncle who still lives in Tennessee, who just turned 99, and he still, I'll talk about buying a fishing boat, like, or what he's going to do. And I think he's still dreaming. And that's what I believe has kept him healthy and strong and vibrant at, you know, 99 years old. And I just think that people along the way stop dreaming.
Yeah.
And that really becomes, I don't know. I think that's where you become complacent and you just settle. Mm-hmm. And you're not out there going for it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I think dreams are just a huge part of for us at any age.
Yeah.
At any age. And it's really important to keep that alive. So I love that.
I agree.
So yeah, let's talk about, so you've had so many, but what is one of your sort of greatest accomplishments that stands out for you at this point in your career?
Oh, greatest accomplishment. That'd be kind of hard to say just like one particular thing, because you have different things that are meaningful for different reasons, you know, like even going back to what we talked about, being able to play the Grand Ole Opry for the first time. I mean, that certainly was something that I sort of dreamed of being able to do. I think, you know, just being able to be an artist, like playing music is all I've ever done with my life. Like that's all I ever wanted to do. And sometimes I think about just the fact that I get to make my living playing music and travel and record and perform for people, you know, is sort of a weird accomplishment. And it's in and of itself,
sure.
You know, if you just said that, like that alone is a special thing. But if we were to look to like more specific things, I mean, there's, you know, been certain things like just having, you know, Grammy nominations or things like that would have been, you know, would have been things that I've dreamed about. I've had like three now and hopefully one day we'll actually win one. But I got to be the first woman to win the Mandolin Player of the Year award, which was kind of special to me just because I grew up with so many of my heroes being pretty much all my mandolin heroes when I was growing up were men, and they're wonderful. I mean, they
sure.
were absolutely always treated me with such kindness and embraced me and, you know, would teach me things. And, just all along the way, like gave me opportunities to perform with them and all those things. But I think like being able to sort of like have a female influence in that area and feel like I sort of by winning that award, felt like I got to represent all the like young girls that are coming up to play now that I see coming up in music and will come up to me after a show and you know, talk about how they just started playing mandolin. I feel very proud of that, that's been, you know, something that I've kind of carried with me as I guess an accomplishment that I'm grateful that I got to have happen.
Oh, that's wonderful. So this is kind of a similar question, but they're different. So there's great accomplishments and all those are amazing, but there's always that one of your favorite performances or maybe one of your most memorable performances. So I'd love to, you can share a story about either one of those, like your favorite, memorable, either one.
Yeah, well, one of the ones that for whatever reason just popped up in my mind is there's a kind of a legendary festival in Newport, Rhode Island called the Newport Folk Festival. And every year they have just all kinds of great performers. And a couple summers ago, I was invited to be part of this by Brandi Carlile, who's an amazing singer, songwriter, artist. And she was hosting this all-female collaboration. And it was the first time in like the 60 years of the festival that they had had their headline show be an all-female-led cast. And so she invited me and some of my fellow friends to kind of come join. And she sat in on a set I was doing at this festival called Telluride in Telluride, Colorado, earlier that summer. And so she was like, oh, you guys got to come be part of the show. And she had said, Dolly Parton's going to be there closing us down, but nobody knows. It's going to be a secret, you know, that she's going to, she's going to kind of like show up and surprise the entire audience. And so I was like, and of course, I'm just such a huge Dolly fan, as I know most all of us are. But I was like, wow. And I had met her briefly before, but, you know, didn't really know her, had never been on stage with her or anything. And so she comes to the show. And of course, no one knows she's going to be there. And there's all these great people on the schedule for this set, you know, so it's like each person is doing like one or two songs. And then they're like, okay, now we have a very special guest. And so out comes Dolly. And of course, everybody loses their mind that it's Dolly. And she does a few songs. And I'm just standing side stage watching Dolly play and thinking, this is awesome. I'm loving this. And then at the end, she invites all of us women to come out on stage with her and sing 9 to 5 to kind of close things down. And that was just kind of this magical, fun moment of being at this legendary festival, which if you can imagine, the festival's right on the water. So you have all the people out there in the audience, but then you also have people who drive their boats up to the shoreline. So not only do you have people, you know, in the audience on land, but you have people in the audience on the water too. So it's just this, it's this beautiful thing to look out into the audience there anyway. And then let alone like just have this stage full of amazing women with Dolly singing 9 to 5. And so that was just pure fun, you know, and
kind
of magical, to have that happen also as a bit of a surprise. I mean, I knew she was going to be there, but the audience was completely surprised, but we didn't know we were going to get to sing with her on stage. So that was really fun.
Oh my gosh. Now it says here you performed for 3 presidents. That's pretty incredible too.
Yeah, it's you know, definitely something I wouldn't have ever thought I would have had the opportunity to do. So I feel, quite fortunate.
Well, great. Let's talk now about, so this is, and as I interview different artists, this can sometimes be the challenging piece of it, but how have you navigated, especially as being a young girl, like how have you navigated the business side versus the artistic side or the performing side of your career? So do you have any advice for that? Because you definitely seem to be on that right track, but that's the hard part for a lot of artists is navigating the business side of things.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people can either, you know, be super interested in the business or super interested in the artistic side. And then you have some people who kind of enjoy both. I'm definitely one of those people who enjoys both sides of it. Like I really love the creative side, but I also enjoy the business side too. Sometimes I find the two things to be stressful to kind of navigate simultaneously. Like I feel like I can easily just go into one world, or I could be interested in the business side if I didn't have to worry about any of the other stuff even more. You know, so I think more than anything, it's important to like have a good team around you that you know you mm-hmm. can trust, that you know have your best interests at heart. But at the same time, you have to know what's going on too, because I think putting your, you know, your, if there's one thing I've learned, there's nobody that's going to be as invested in you and your life and career than you are. And they shouldn't be. It's your life, your career. So like at the end of the day, you need to really know what's going on as much as possible. And it can be tricky to kind of keep up with everything. Mm-hmm. But you also have to learn to be good at like delegating tasks.
Yes.
And so that's one thing I've really had to learn, is to both be very involved, understand everything that's going on to the best of my ability, but also not, you know, hold the reins so tightly that I don't allow people to help me. That, because, you know, if you're overwhelmed and you're stressed and you're trying to wear too many hats, you're not going to be good at anything. So I think it's important to be able to delegate those tasks and find people that you really trust to, you know, ask for help in this area, like, you know, regardless of what it is. You know, maybe you're really good at this one part of the business, but this part isn't like the thing that's your strong suit, and just kind of figuring out what those things are that you enjoy doing, that you can be productive in doing, and then try to, you know, hand the rest off to somebody else that can do a better job than you could do.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome that you've learned that at such a young age, because that is something that people really struggle with. And I think having a good team is important, and delegation, but you should always keep a pulse on what's going on. And because you're right, nobody cares as much about your career as you. And that's an important thing for anybody to learn. And I've been at this for a very long time in my business. And I have to say that there's been moments where I've let things really go to a team and not just had that pulse on it. You know, like I've got 100% delegate, but then you don't really know what's going on. And then all of a sudden you go back and you say, how did this get on my website? Like I would have never wanted this on my website.
Or I don't like the way this was handled. Yeah, absolutely.
And so then you're like, what the heck? And so I just think that that's really, really great advice for anyone that's in this.
And it doesn't
space.
Mean that it's going to be perfect, or you're going to be perfect, or the people you delegate will always do things the way you want them done. And you know, sometimes you may be stressing over something kind of insignificant, like worrying about something that maybe isn't quite as important as something else you might be should spending your focus on. So I think also trying to like find your level of priorities and importance, and what is the things that you really feel like need to be done a certain way, and what are the things that are just easy to kind of go, you know what, I'm going to let that person try to put their vision into this little bit of this thing, and I can steer the ship, but I don't have to like, you know, hold the reins so tightly that no one has room to bring their own strengths to the table.
Great. Well, you mentioned the story with Alison Krauss and how that was kind of a story in itself. I'd love you to share that. I love Alison Krauss too.
Sure.
And I just think I'm sure she's been an incredible mentor for you as well.
She has been. Yeah. I was so lucky to meet her early on, and just the influence that she's been in my life throughout my whole career, and the opportunities that she's given me, you know, at an early age, especially, was just unbelievable. Because if there could have been one hero that I would want to meet or know, she would have been it. And she was the one that I've had the chance to really spend the most time with. So I'm extra grateful for that and for her. But I mean, I first got my first Alison Krauss record when I was 9 years old, and it just kind of blew my mind. I just loved it, fell in love with the music. And I think it kind of opened up a whole new world of that's what I want to do. And like I said, because mm-hmm. especially in bluegrass music, which is what I grew up doing the most of, it is mostly men, you know, at the time, especially, it's like most of my heroes were males, and they were awesome. And I'm grateful for all the people I got to learn from. But I think really seeing a female that also played bluegrass, but also did other things, tapped into mm-hmm. other genres and collaborated, and kind of like the wide span of music, really opened my eyes in a way that made me go, that's what I want to do. And, so it was kind of my dream to meet her. We had this magazine that we didn't even subscribe to it. There was a friend of ours, a local fiddle player named Lowell Logan, who was quite the influence to me when I was a kid. And he would bring me his copy of Bluegrass Unlimited to our house every month. You know, he'd get his issue, look through it, and drive it over to my house. And so I would always flip through the magazine and just, I was such a nerd being such a fan of hers that anywhere her name was mentioned in the magazine, I'd be like, there's Allison's name. There's Allison's name. And so there was a festival called Merle Fest that happens still in Wilkesboro, North Carolina every year. And it's this big festival. And her and the band were listed on there as they were going to be performing. And I had seen it. But then later my dad was flipping through the magazine and he said, hey, look at this. And I was like, yeah, I saw that. And he said, do you want to go? And I was like, really? You know, I couldn't believe it. I was 10 at the time. And I never got to see her live or anything, but it was kind of my dream to get to meet her at some point and hear her play. And so I was like, yeah. And I mean, at that point, I didn't really grow up with my folks taking vacations and stuff like that. Like, we hadn't really traveled that much. And being from the rural little town in Tennessee that we're from, even going to North Carolina, which, you know, is probably like 7 or 8 hours from where I grew up, was quite the trek, you know? And so I couldn't believe that we were going to get to go to this festival in North Carolina to hear my hero, Allison Krauss. And so I just assumed, well, I'm totally going to get to meet her. Like, in my mind, I was like, I'm going to get to meet her. She's going to sign my fiddle and it's going to be awesome. So we drive there and we get there and realize the festival's huge. I mean, it's just like massive. You know, there's probably like 100,000 people over the weekend. And so I had been going to these tiny little bluegrass festivals around home where like anybody that played on stage, you could just walk up to and meet and talk to as soon as they got off stage. And so in my mind, I think, even though I knew Allison was a big star, I was like, I thought, well, of course I'm going to get to meet her. But then it became pretty obvious, I think, to my parents when we got there, like, oh, this is a huge festival. And so I remember my mom saying, well, honey, like, you know, you may not get to meet her, so I don't want you to get your hopes up too much. You may not actually get to meet her, but at least you'll get to hear her play. And someday you'll get to meet her if you don't this weekend. So I was like, okay, well, just, but please pray I get to meet her. You know, I was like, okay, but just please pray I get to meet her. And so I don't know if you ever heard of the band Nickel Creek. But the mandolin player in that band, Chris Thiele, who's kind of like one of the big mandolin heroes in the mandolin world, he had just played a side stage on one of the days, you know, we were there, and I was able to, and it was like a smaller setup, you know, there, and I got to get in this line, and he signed my mandolin strap, and I had just got to meet him, which was a big deal to me as well. Sure. And I made it about probably 20 or 30 feet away, and somebody stops me. And I had been jamming the night before. When we got into the festival, there were some jams and stuff happening around the festival site. And this guy stops us and he says, hey, are you that little girl that was playing mandolin last night? And I was like, yeah. And he said, I told my daughter about you. She's with me now. I hate to bother you, but would you please play a tune? And I thought, okay, sure. You know, so I got out my mandolin. And I don't know, my dad in hindsight probably, you know, must have been smart enough to think something like this could happen, but I was totally oblivious to it. And so he was like, well, how about you, why don't you try playing that Ode to a Butterfly? Or maybe the fact that we had just met Chris Thiele, it was fresh on his mind, but that was one of Chris's tunes off of the Nickel Creek album that I had just kind of learned to play. And so I played a little bit of it. And of course, we were far enough from where I had just met Chris that he wouldn't have heard me. You know, I mean, we were pretty good ways away. But, you know, as people do when a little kid is playing, the crowd starts to form as I'm like playing a tune for this little girl and her dad. And somebody says, oh, you know, that's Chris's tune. And they go get Chris and they tell him, and he comes over. And by the time I finish, I had no idea he was in front of me. I was kind of like knelt down on the ground or something playing. And by the time I was done, I look up and there's Chris in front of me. And I was just like, whoa. And he said, holy cow, want to play it together? And I was like, yes, you know. And so he went and he sat with me and we jammed for like 2 hours at this festival. Now, he had played this side stage, so it was accessible, but he had a set later with Nickel Creek on the main stage. And so we had kind of told him about, you know, coming and Allison being one of my big heroes. Allison had produced the Nickel Creek album, the first Nickel Creek album. So in realizing I was such a big fan, he took me backstage to meet her, which was just like, just like unbelievable. I mean, that everything worked out that way. I mean, it couldn't have been more perfect. And so I not only did I get to meet Chris, you know, who was like a big mandolin hero, but he's the one that gets to take me backstage and introduce me to my big hero, Alison Krauss. Now at the time, I didn't get to play for her. It was a very brief meeting, but I was set. I was happy. I was stoked. I got to meet my hero. So then fast forward a couple months later, I'm at this big convention called IBMA, which is, you know, I mentioned the Mandolin Player of the Year Award. They host the Bluegrass Awards that week, and it's kind of like this big convention and festival, similar to like the CMA Fest or something, but for bluegrass music. And so I thought, man, I wonder if anybody from Allison's band will be here. And sure enough, Ron Block, who's been a member of her band for many, many years, walks in and this room backstage, and I'm just like, it's Ron Block. So I got to meet Ron, and he couldn't have been sweeter. He jammed with me and my brother and like kind of just hung out with us over the weekend, which I was just like, I can't believe like Ron Block of my favorite band in the world, Alison Krauss and Union Station, is being so awesome and cool and like hanging out with our family. And then fast forward, I guess I had just made a little instrumental album with some local musicians, and I gave it to Ron. And I think, if I recall, I might have signed one to Allison. And so he took it and gave it to her, you know, to my hero, Allison Krauss. And it was my like little 10-year-old CD of just mandolin tunes. And I kid you not, just a couple months later, I get a call from Allison Krauss inviting me to come play the Grand Ole Opry. I'd never played with her. I'd only met her just like for a second backstage. It's just, it's unbelievable that she would take that kind of risk on a young kid and, you know, invite me to come play on national television with her and her band at the Opry. I mean, so it was, yeah, it was kind of an incredible way that it all kind of worked out from that first meeting that very much couldn't have happened, you know, may not have happened, all the way to meeting Ron and how all that kind of panned out.
Well, I just want to point out that, gosh, this is another really great nugget, but there's so many times, like when that gentleman asked you to play for his daughter, I mean, a lot of people would have just said, oh, we don't have time right now, or, oh, I'm so sorry, like, or I can't, or people look at those really sort of maybe insignificant moments as, well, I'm not going to, like, some people, one, are like embarrassed to play like that, because, you know, it does draw a crowd in like that. So there's a lot of people that are like, oh, I couldn't do that, or I haven't warmed up, or I hear people always say, my voice isn't ready, or I haven't warmed up, or I haven't played, or I'm not in tune, and because they're nervous. So that happens. But there's also that piece that happens of, I'm not going to just play for this guy and this little girl, but look at what one small moment turned into, probably an influence on your entire career.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's how it works a lot of times. The things that we kind of think don't matter are usually the things that matter. And oftentimes the things that we spend so much time putting importance on maybe aren't even the thing we should always be focusing on. So I think, that whole thing of when preparation meets opportunity, like they say, you know, you kind of have to be ready for that. And, I think that's hugely important.
Absolutely. I love that part of the story. So let's talk about your new album. Let's talk about what you're working on like right now, because that's exciting. So tell us all about it.
Well, so my latest record came out last year in the end of February, right before the pandemic. I got about 2 weeks into my album release tour, and then the world kind of shut down. And so we had probably 40 something shows as part of that album release tour, at least just the first part of the album release tour that canceled. And so it was really just kind of a wild way to put new music into the world. It was my first album in like 5 years that I had put out, and you know, was interesting to feel like the way that I've shared the music thus far has mostly just been through the internet and through live streams and through getting to share it with people that way. But I'm really proud of that record, and I feel like it was a joy to get to make, and quite different from anything I had done before, in that, you know, I did grow up playing mostly bluegrass music, but as I've gotten into other styles of music, and my influences have always been really broad. And so as a songwriter, just continuing to kind of expand into whatever territory mm-hmm. that leads me, I feel like this record kind of is a good reflection of where, at least where I was at that particular point in time, and experimenting with some different textures and sounds and things like that. But then fast forward, I guess we're recording this in the end of April, and coming up in May, I'm going to be doing my first couple band shows in well over a year since things shut down. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to be able to get out there and actually in some ways play some of this music for what will feel like the first time since we got to play, you know, so little of it live for people right. before. So I'm excited about that. But it's also been a wonderful year of being able to be creative in a way that I haven't before. I mean, I've not had this kind of time off since I was a kid. I mean, I've not had time off from traveling. I've just always done it. And I love it. But it's been really just wonderful and beautiful to be able to be home. And my husband's a touring musician as well. So we've just been together this whole time. And it's been really special in a lot of ways, because we've always had, you know, a kind of situation where one of us is traveling. Sometimes we travel together, but it's not uncommon for one of us to have to leave for a week to 3 weeks sometimes, you know? And so to be able to have that kind of time at home, I've done a lot of songwriting. I've been able to get more into recording in my home studio, and that's been wonderful too, to just kind of dive into that and learn more. So I think, this period of time is, in some ways, is going to be good for a lot of us musicians, I think, because it's gave us an opportunity to kind of reset, refocus, to be creative in new ways, and learn a lot of new skill sets just as a result of the time off from traveling. So, yeah.
Oh, that is great. Oh, that's just so awesome. And it's exciting. We are starting to see different shows, and different things are starting to happen. So it's getting kind of exciting and hopeful for a lot of performers. We're starting to see theaters talking about reopening. And so it's been a tough year for performers. And so I'm super, super excited about that. So our signature question of the show is, what does working from your happy place mean to you?
Oh gosh, I think this past year has really taught me about like working from a happy place. I think there's something to be said, like for me, recording, creating, when you really get in that zone, and I think we all know what that feels like from time to time, to just be able to get in a focused state that's so exciting that you just, like, you don't even want to take time to eat, you know, because you're just working on something that you're so excited by and you're driven by. And so, you know, those moments of focus like that can be kind of far and few between and kind of hard to find sometimes. But I've been able to experience that a little bit more over this past year, just having quiet time. And I think that's when I really feel like I'm in my happiest place, is when I'm growing, when I'm learning, when I'm creating something, and really feeling like I'm sort of doing what I'm meant to do, you know? And I think we all have those moments where it's like we have tasks and things that, you know, we have laundry to do, we have, you know, dishes to wash, and things that we all have to do that are all, you know, part of our lives. But when we do have those moments to really dive in our creative way, whether it's your business or your music or art form or whatever you're doing, it's just really fulfilling when you can get in that space.
Absolutely. So what advice would you give to other young musicians that are kind of starting out in this path, or even any musician really, but especially with your experience of starting out so young? And I'm sure you're a hero to a lot of these young girls and even young boys. So what advice would you give to them in starting out in this journey?
Well, I think that talent is one thing. And there's a lot of people that I know that have a lot of talent, like every bit of talent as I would have, as the next person would have, but maybe they haven't put in the work that's necessary to really be able to have it. So I think, you know, if you're not passionate about it, you're not going to put in the work to begin with. So you got to find something you're really passionate about that drives you. And then I think take that passionate feeling that you have and turn it into a work ethic, because I think without that, it would be truly hard to be very successful in anything you're doing, because nothing comes easy for very long. You know, we're all handed things from time to time that we didn't feel like we did anything for. You know, there's things that like show up in our lives and kind of work mm-hmm. out of these moments. But I think, you know, I said it earlier, when preparation meets opportunity, I think you have to be ready to seize those moments when they do appear and be able to meet them in a strong way. And so, yeah, just take whatever you're passionate about, nurture that and work hard for it.
And that is the key in putting yourself out there, especially as a performer, get heard. Absolutely. Well, this has been an absolutely delightful interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I know we're going to take things out with the song, but before we do that, can you tell our listeners, where's the best place for them to follow you, find you, listen to your music?
Yeah, well, I have a website, sierrahole.com. My music's available on all the various streaming platforms. You can purchase it on my website as well. And of course, I'm on Instagram at Sierra Dawn Hole and Facebook, Sierra Hole Music, and Twitter and all those places. So
fantastic.
And YouTube.
Great.
All those spots that one might think to look.
This has just been so amazing. And I think nothing would be more appropriate than you taking us out with a song.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'll play, since I talked about the 25 Trips album a little bit, I'll play the first track off that album. And this probably goes a little bit hand in hand with some of the things we've been talking about. Like sometimes, you know, when you're a young person, you just kind of go straight into it. And as we get older, sometimes you allow the doubts and believing, well, you know, maybe I'm not cut out for this or I'm not cut out for that to kind of like pop in. And I think I was going through a period of time where I was like, you know, kind of struggling to figure out what my next thing needed to be musically. And I was kind of having a conversation with my husband one day as he was getting ready to walk out the door. And I was like, you know, I don't know. I'm just frustrated and don't feel like I, you know what I'm doing anymore. And he just said, you know, Sierra, I mean, I believe in you so much, but at some point, you know, you really have to learn to believe in yourself and, you know that you're meant to do it. So that's where this song came from.
You believe in me, but I can't see what you see. How long is it gonna take me to trust myself? I've been stuck here so long. Gotta find a way to move on. I gotta get out of here. I gotta let go of this fear. Oh, I swore I'd never let it go this far. Now another year, I'm stuck here in the dark.
Beautiful.
Oh, thank you
so much.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, for this great interview. And to all our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in today. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single one of these inspiring interviews. And we'll see you next time on Work From Your Happy Place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.